This episode of The Loop is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the PGA Tour. Michelob Ultra Greenside is bringing fans closer to the game than ever before. Learn how you can win exclusive golf prizes and experiences at MichelobUltra.com/superior access/greenside. Enjoy responsibly 2024 Anheuser-Busch Michelob Ultra Light Beer, St. Louis, Missouri. Michelob Ultra Registered. No purchase necessary. Open to U.S. residents 21 and over. Begins on March 1st, 2024, and ends on November 30th, 2024. Multiple entry periods. Visit www.michelobultra.com/superior access/greenside for free entry, entry deadlines, and official rules. Message and data rates may apply. Void where prohibited.
In that particular scene, I was actually applying Joel a job to be employed by Waffle House.
For 3 months, I got an email every week about when I get an interview for a job at Waffle House.
I'm so glad I asked that question.
That's amazing.
I told him if we keep playing that way, he's going to need a job.
Welcome to a special jam-packed episode of The Loop presented by Michelob. I'm Alex Myers, and as always, I'm joined by Steve Hennessy and Christopher Powers, but also by our very own Shane Ryan as we discuss all things Full Swing. The second season of Netflix's popular docuseries has dropped, and we all got to see it ahead of time. So take this as your spoiler alert. But we're not only going to talk about the show, we're also going to hear from five of its biggest stars: Tom Kim, Wyndham Clark, Keegan Bradley, and Joel Damon and caddy Gino Bonelli. In addition, we also talked to executive producers Chad Mumm and Warren Smith. So yeah, there's a lot to get to, and we are excited to talk about it all. All right, guys, after all that preamble, let's dive in. Let's start. Shane, I'm going to kick it to you. You're our resident review guru. I know you're writing up a bunch of reviews for the site. You did it last year. We did it. We broke down each episode by episode last year. We went all out. But this year, we're going to do one big jam-packed episode. Anyway, let's just start general thoughts. I guess, was season two better than season one? Anything else that jumps out at you after watching these eight episodes?
Well, first of all, let me say, to be with the cool kids again, I get to come on here once in a while. It is such an honor. Dad, I told you they'd have me back. This is awesome. I'm so pumped. It's an interesting contrast to last year. We did every episode, like you said, right? Now we're doing the mega, like, obsessive podcast, and I like that. Yeah, to answer your question, short version, yes, it's better than season one. And season one had its good points, right? I was pretty critical at times of season one. Season two through four episodes, I was like, this is a carbon copy of season one. It's got some bummers, but it's got a great Joel Damon episode. It's genuinely the same exact thing. And then the second half hit of season two, and it took off. It was Full Swing at its best, I think, by far. We'll go more into this. My favorite episode was actually the JT and Keegan episode where they're waiting to get the call. But yeah, so I'll give you my nutshell, and I hope I don't end up sounding redundant because I'm sure I'll bring it up again. But my nutshell in Full Swing is that it is at its worst when they're forcing a narrative on you. So when they are saying to you, Tom Kim, the 20-year-old, has to perform well in the majors this year, or it's a disaster, right? or he won't validate. When they're telling you that, you're like, that's not true. I know that's not true. Right. Even if I was only a minor golf fan, I think I would know that's not true. Right. And I don't like where you're going with this. It is at its best when it's not doing that, because they have some very skilled storytellers. So when the story is, we're going to follow these two guys around who are on the Ryder Cup captain's pick bubble. And that's, things are going to happen. Like, drama's going to happen throughout the year. We're going to showcase, sometimes there are good narratives, the Fitzpatrick brothers. Yeah, it probably sucks to be the younger brother in the same field of somebody who's a major champion. Like, right? Like, if my older brother was a great novelist, that would be horrible, right? Like if he was like me, like a writer, but way better. So that stuff is awesome. And that's, I think, to get into the data, there were, I counted five really good episodes this year that I liked. And I think last year there's a lot of great material, but there was like one great one, the Damon episode. Right. And then the others, you kind of had to talk yourself into a little bit. But I think definitely they surpassed themselves.
Yeah, the forcing of the narrative part, you know, the first episode definitely did that with the PGA Tour versus Liv. I knew they had to do that to sort of set up the season, so that made sense. But there was a bunch in there that I was like, really? Like, I didn't realize Rory and Koepka played a practice round together. Even we were all at the Masters, like that wasn't really even talked about.
Yeah.
And then they didn't even mention Rom's name at all till like Nance's call, like, and Rom wins. Like, you know, this guy was the face of the PGA Tour all of last year. So yeah, I thought it got off to a rocky start, but then really ramped up. So I was impressed overall with the season.
Real quick, Steve, can I say that was my favorite bit of editing at the Masters presser when Rory announced, or it was like brought up, someone asked a question about the practice pairing with Koepka. And I swear to God, they cut to the end of the press conference when everyone starts talking. Like, press conference is over, so they start talking, but right. They cut to it so immediately that it sounded like they were grumbling. Like, there was it was like Rory's gonna play a 9-hole practice round with Koepka, and all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
The editing is so good on the show.
Like, I was like, I wasn't at the Masters, but I guarantee that didn't happen.
That didn't happen,
like, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I just thought that was like the funniest bit of like editing magic,
right?
The magic is real, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I agree, Shane, on the back half being obviously much better. My thing, my biggest takeaway was, and I don't know what the answer for this is, you know, unless they go to a Hard Knock style where they're literally following it and releasing episodes kind of, you know, by the month. But, you know, we've seen Rory kind of do this 180 the last few months, weeks, whatever you want to call it. And it's a nice welcome 180 for sure. And now casual fans are who don't follow the game like we do. Maybe they've seen the Rory quotes recently. Maybe they haven't. They're going to tune into this show now. And it's like a year ago, his takes on Liv. And people might be confused. Like, wait, didn't I just hear he's like cool now? And now he hates it again. Like, maybe I'm saying people are too stupid, but I think they kind of are. I'm trying to say that in the nicest way possible. But people are going to put this on and be like, whoa, he still hates Liv, you know? I don't know what the answer to that is, but you know, HBO does it with Hard Knocks. They follow training camp and they release an episode by the week. So it can be done, but I don't know. It's going to be weird for people to watch this all over again when Rory has worked pretty hard the last few months, which conspiracy theory Christopher is saying, because he knows these episodes are coming out and he's going to look like an asshole again.
Interesting. Yeah.
But also, yeah, I don't know. He's changed his mind. That's what he was thinking then. I just, this whole going back a year and recapping stuff, like you said, those first few episodes were pretty weak and people are going to be like, wow, Rory's back on the live hate train or I don't know. So, was glad to see the back half of the season kind of.
Isn't it crazy with how important on streaming it is that they get you to episodes 2 and 3 right. That for the second straight year they led with just their weakest, that's nuts to me. There was the JT Jordan episode last time. Jordan, that was so bad. Anyway,
CP, you brought up something I was going to ask my next question. You mentioned the fans, and I know Shane, our big discussion point last year was, who is this appealing to? Is it appealing to the hardcore fan? Is it appealing to the casual fan? Is it trying to appeal to the new fan? We talked at length last year about the pros and cons of how they did it. How do you think they did it this year? And because to me, you know, last year, the big joke was every episode they explained what the cut is or this or that. You know, this year, I feel like they did kind of give the fans, the people watching, a little more credit for like knowing what's going on. And they kind of, you know, it wasn't like a golf 101 or PGA Tour 101. It went a little above that. I don't know if you agreed with that.
I was lost all season because I didn't know what par was. And so I was like,
the Ryder Cup. You were like, the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, what is the Ryder Cup? Where are all these numbers with negatives in front of them? They were way better at that this year. And it's funny, like I joked on it early of like, yo, where's our explanation for par? Like in episode one, right. We didn't get, what's the cut? They treated their audience much better. And there were still cliches, but the cliches were like, okay, at the climax of every episode, we have your like Apple commercial indie pop, like wailing dude singing, right?
I mean,
like,
oh my God. As I'm standing at the station,
It's like every single, like the genre just repeat, like, but it's stuff like that, or it's like the slate clapping in front of people. Like Full Swing loves itself. It loves to be like, yo, you're about to watch a documentary, right? Yeah. So there were still cliches, but they weren't like audience insulting cliches. Like, you know, like a golf ball is made from impacted rubber or whatever. Right. So yeah, I thought they were much better. And they, like to Chris's point a little bit, they almost were like, it was kind of surprising. Like the first two episodes, they blazed through all four majors in a way. Yeah. And they revisited them in later, but they were just like, we're going to get after these and then we're going to tell stories about people. And so I thought they philosophically, like artistically, I think they found a better way to tell stories eventually this season for sure. And not insulting the audience on top of it.
Right. Okay. We'll start talking about the episodes in a second. I just want to say, first off, Chad Mum, executive producer, said, why am I talking like that? Executive producer Chad Mum said they had 900 hours of footage. They cut it down to about 6. I know, Steve, I think you asked him about if he left anything on the cutting room floor. I was surprised. They actually made it, like, they thought they didn't. They thought they got everything in. But it is kind of amazing because, like Shane knows, when we talked to them last year, he was saying, oh, we have such good Ricky stuff. We hope we can use it next year. And then lo and behold, Ricky wins and makes this comeback to get to use it. So, you know, it's a combination, a documentary like this or a docuseries is really a combination of great editorial choices for sure, but definitely some good fortune. We're going to have some clips of guys talking about that stuff. And here's our first one. Here's Chad Mum and Warren Smith talking about kind of the luck that they had in making season 2 of Full Swing.
I think we are very lucky. And I think what's amazing about this show and what I love about this series is it's not necessarily just about the result on the course. You know, that plays into it, but so much more is going on in the world of golf at the moment. And that's crossing over into politics and, you know, everything really. It's in the public eye pretty much, you know, regularly every day. So I think for us, we couldn't have wished for a better sort of time to start the show, but but there's also still that brilliant on-course narrative that's playing out. And it's like this sport just keeps bringing these new players through. There's right. You know, every single year there's rookies and there's other people that are coming back, returning from injury, and people are going to live, coming back. So it really is a brilliant, brilliant sport to make a documentary series about for me.
Just to give an anecdote on that, Alex, I remember we had a new producer join for season 2 and we had filmed for a couple of weeks and he called me kind of in a panic because he's like, nothing's happened yet. Like, I you know, am I doing my job right? Like, we don't have any story, you know? And then I said, listen, we've been doing this long enough. Like, you just got to keep rolling and shit's going to get weird, I promise. And of course, you know, like a week later is like June 6th and then we're off to the races.
Do you have a golf trip with the boys planned this summer? Or are you just looking for an excuse to have one? Do you want to get that trip sponsored? Well, Mizzen & Main has you covered. Mizzen & Main, the makers of the greatest dress shirt of all time, makes more than just work clothes. If they could make a dress shirt comfortable, imagine what they could do with golf polos, pants, shorts, pullovers, and t-shirts. Right now, they're looking for golfers who want free polos. If you and your golf group are planning a trip this summer, you could apply for free polos and swag for the entire group. You may have seen a few pro golfers wearing Mizzen on your TV on Sundays. Everything they make is good enough for the PGA pros and comfortable enough for the highest of hit handicappers. The Mizzen & Main Bro-Am is a sweepstakes running from February 26th till March 10th. It's a chance to get your group of golf buddies covered in Mizzen & Main along with a bunch of free swag. All you have to do is apply at mizzenandmain.com/bro-am-sweepstakes. All the info is on their social channels as well. Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, etc. After you've applied for the Bro-Am, because why not? It's free. Visit www.mizzenandmain to start shopping. Make sure you then use the promo code LOOP to get 25% off a purchase of $130 or more at mizzenandmain.com. Again, use the promo code LOOP to get 25% off a purchase of $130 or more at mizzenandmain.com.
All right. And indeed they were off to the races. Okay. Guys, let's get into it. We've kind of broken this down into three big parts. The first two episodes are really PGA Tour versus LIV. Then you had these kind of character episodes. And then finally, it culminates with the final two episodes of the Ryder Cup. Really, the sixth episode also is a lot about the Ryder Cup and the picking, the process of making the captain's pick. So Again, let's start with the first. Shane, you said the other day when we were talking about this that you don't like the forced narratives. You also haven't been thrilled with how they talk about Liv. So tell us what you mean about that, because obviously that was a big part of these first two episodes.
The guys on Liv got hundreds of millions of dollars to leave the PGA Tour, and some huge names did leave. These guys are unbelievable golfers, don't get me wrong, but there is a consensus in the golf world that they just took the money and now they're not working nearly as hard.
So I remember after the Masters, in real time, there being that like reaction that we see so often in sports that we're actually seeing with Anthony Kim now, where it's like, oh, all his haters can't believe he's back. You're like, there were no Anthony Kim haters. Everybody loves Anthony Kim. I remember after the Masters, it was, well, everybody said the Liv guys couldn't play well in the Masters. Look what they did. And I was like, dude, who was saying the Liv guys couldn't play? They've literally been on that tour for a few months. Of course they have a chance to play well in the majors. Everybody knew that. And it was one of those, like Joel Beal would put it as in, oh, and I thought I heard Steph Curry wasn't a good shooter, right?
Yeah.
That's like the classic thing. So I thought it was unfortunate that Full Swing really chose that as their engine narrative in the first two episodes, that especially with the Masters, oh my God, they're shocking the world that, you know, Brooks Koepka is playing. I was like, no, come on. Like Brooks Koepka might be surprising because he was hurt, but it wasn't a surprise that the Liv guys would do it. So I thought that was kind of a narrative misstep that they really, really forced on you. And let's say this, they're like a pit bull when they get a storyline in their jaws, Full Swing. They will not let up. They hit you with it over and over. Sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not. Right. The other thing that was interesting was, and I'm not saying it was good or bad necessarily, but I do think in season one, they laid out the context of, like, you know, Saudi Arabia's human rights abuse, everything that made people object to Liv in a big way. And it was like, this season was crazy. It was like, if you didn't know the story, you would have been like, why are people so upset that these guys are going to play in this other league? They kept saying it. They're like, people are mad, but they never said why, which I just like kind of flagged it as something interesting. And I don't know the reason for it.
Yeah. Guys, you talk about Rory and all this stuff. I mean, seeing that again, and I know CP, you were just saying like he's kind of, you know, made a 180 turn on some of this stuff, but seeing that whole, you know, he was the sacrificial lamb and how, you know, seeing all that stuff again, did it change anything for you? How you thought about it or anything? And also, I know we want to talk about his comments about worrying about the Liv bots. And also, I will say I was impressed that he at least admitted that he was upset about Brooks potentially and then eventually getting to five majors first. So some Rory thoughts from you, CP. I know you love talking about Rory.
Yeah, those are two of those, like, he's literally too honest for his own good moments, you know. Right. Talking about the Liv, we've heard he's like terminally online. Obviously, he doesn't tweet that much or you know, Instagram that all that often, but obviously he's pretty tuned into what's happening. I mean, the phrase the Liv bots, like, that's a guy who's literally on Twitter every day, like we are. So that was kind of a crazy thing to hear, especially he's thinking about that during the Masters and then he misses the cut. Like, maybe just try and focus on playing the Masters, maybe not the Liv bots. I don't know. That's just my crazy take. And then, yeah, the Brooks thing, like you said, I thought the best moment, I don't know if this was from episode one or two or later, so sorry if I'm jumping around, but like Shane said, it's best when it shows those little behind the scenes moments. I think it was at Oak Hill when he went into the locker room right after. I think he top 10'd.
Yeah.
Just was like, I can't fucking finish these turns.
Yeah, really
cool. I was like, wow, that's like what we want out of this show. Like that locker room. Just like whatever he shot on the final day, it wasn't good enough. He needed to shoot 65 and he shot 70 or whatever to go in the locker room. Again, honest to a fault moment from Rory. And the camera guy being there, great timing by him. But yeah, that was like, wow, it's nice to see him, even him admit, like, kind of what we all say, like, what's going wrong on these Sundays for him at the majors. So
yeah, to actually see that, because you want to hope that he cares so much that, like, he wants to find an answer and change something. So to have that honest conversation with his caddy and his team, like, that, I agree with you, CP. That was sneaky, one of the best moments of the entire season.
And it was good because at the end of season one, it culminated obviously with him winning the tour championship and there was the great stuff in the locker room and you got to see him like all happy about winning. So now we get to see the flip side of it. So I like that. But I couldn't believe he said something that he needs a complete reboot, and then he feels so far away. Like, I mean, he's coming close. Like, complete reboot seems a bit extreme.
His manager, Sean, at that moment was like, Rory, no, Rory. He was like, it was funny because he's so soft and gentle with him. And that guy in real life, like, is, most of his job is like telling people no. And he's like, he's very kind of intimidating. But I love with Rory, he's like, come on, Rory, like, that's not how we're going to do it. Like, yeah. Very, very like placatory and soft.
Yeah, complete reboot. In contrast, obviously, and again, we're mixing the first two episodes here, but I think this was in the second episode where they started to really hammer you with the cool guys on the Live Tour, obviously led by DJ with On His Boat, the great song that was playing. Steve, I know you said you even wanted to Shazam that. There's probably something much cooler than Shazam, but that's what I know.
I'm still a Shazam guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Good.
OG, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Glad to hear Shazam is still a thing. I can't even say it. But yeah, I liked him on the boat. You know, but then I also liked them showing him missing the turn, going to LACC. Yeah. He's like, oh, come on, DJ, let's do this. Just like a normal dope driving around. Dad, like with his, you know, GPS working.
It must be a little nerve wracking the drive on, like with cameras there, because Tom Kim like missed a turn too.
That's a good point. Like, yeah. For sure.
Losing
for
focus sure. on the wheel. It's a little dangerous, maybe. That's something not being talked about.
Steve, you can answer this. To Shane's point before, you know, they make a big deal about Liv kind of like establishing themselves at the major. And I mean, look, that is huge for Liv's credibility, because these other events were like, well, they're kind of exhibition events, but then they show up and what was it? Three of the top six at the Masters. Obviously Brooks had the 54 hole lead, but then he wins the PGA. Steve, and we saw Brooks in the first season too. And it was good to see him kind of be, you know, more open than we usually are used to seeing him with his feelings or at least whatever, and talk about his struggles. But now we see him back on top. What was that kind of like seeing that? And kind of they gave Liv their shine, obviously, and credit that was due.
Yeah, I thought they did. I did find it interesting that they didn't really, like, the first season they followed Poulter and they followed Koepka. There weren't like the full character episodes going forward with a Liv guy, which, you know, setting up the narrative the way that they did, I was a little surprised they didn't, you know, they had a lot of behind the scenes stuff with DJ and Paulina, which was great. Obviously we don't get to see a lot of DJ and Paulina content, but I would have liked to see like a, you know, a Cam Smith episode or something. So that's at least, you know, that was a little bit of a miss, I think. Claude Harmon was so cringy. Do you guys agree? That was like, oh, anytime God, he spoke, brutal. I was so uncomfortable. Oh my God.
I was keeping receipts.
I was keeping receipts.
I believe him too.
Probably. Yeah.
You know what I wrote though, that like he is the human personification of the Live bot. So it's actually good that they had his perspective. I'm not even joking. Like, that's a real voice in the golf landscape, at least for online people like us. I'm like, all right, you gotta have that guy there. Like
right.
He's intimidating too. I picture other Live bots not being so intimidating, but yeah, I wouldn't mess with Claude Harmon. And the Paulina quote, I think she said, like, yeah, this was a good move for us. Yeah, no shit. You just got like $200 million and you're so much richer. Like, oh, it was a bad move?
Yeah.
I thought that was funny.
I did like when DJ talked about, and they asked, well, let's get into the merger stuff here. Yeah. I know, Shane, you thought these two episodes were the weakest ones. And I would agree, but I also think there's some fatigue from us as golf, you know, writers, that we've heard just so much about the Live PGA Tour stuff and even the June 6th stuff. And we all know by now how shocking it was to everybody involved. And by the way, we really find out, I mean, Rory was stunned. I mean, we know that's what he said last year, but everybody kind of thought that he was one of those insiders. He was stunned. It was pretty, I guess, interesting to see some of their reactions to this. But yeah, Shane, like, what did, again, did it change anything for you, or did they focus too much on that? What did you kind of think about all the merger news, June 6th?
I thought about that exact thing, Alex, where it was like, am I just Live fatigue? But then I was like, you know, just as an example, I read Shipnuck's book to review it for Golf Digest, and I kind of liked seeing it back. And there were other things that you know, it's like we all watched all the majors, but I still kind of had fun watching them through Full Swing. You know what I mean? Like, I was at the Wyndham when JT almost made that chip in to make the playoffs. Right. I kind of like forgot about it. Because watching Full Swing, oh man, that's crazy that I was literally like watching it in person. But I don't know. So I guess my point in saying that is that I think there's still a way to tell a good LIV story. And again, this is classic, just armchair stuff. They had 900 hours of footage and they had to reduce it. But I was like, whatever it was, this wasn't it. Like, this wasn't really compelling to me. And that's all I can say, right? I can say, yeah, you might be completely right that I'm just the wrong audience for it, but I just don't think it was well done, the LIV stuff. And I know I sound like, because we're starting with my least favorite episodes, I sound like a hater. And I think like an important point to make to your point is that even with the episodes I didn't like, and you guys have given examples already, there's always good stuff in there that makes you like, well, I'm glad they had the camera in the locker room with Rory, right? When he was doing his thing. I'm glad we got to see JT thank Mito Pereira for choking at the PGA Champions Dinner. You know what I mean? Like, so I do want to add that context as I'm sounding the LIV story, I just didn't do it for me. And I think they told a very shallow story that we have heard, like, it was just like very broad, you know, they didn't really get anything different. And it's kind of incumbent on them, whether this is like an unfair demand or not, you were there all year. It's incumbent on you to tell me something different, like you did with the Ryder Cup.
Right. Right. Well, they did. I think they did a good job with the Ricky stuff. Again, he didn't get his full episode, but like we were saying, they had great stuff from him from last year. They were kind of saving it. He does have this rejuvenation, you know, right after this merger news, everybody heads to the US Open at LACC. And it's kind of this first meeting of since the merger. And Ricky Fowler obviously looks like this is going to be like the crowning moment of his career. Doesn't quite work out that way. Wyndham Clark wins. We're going to talk obviously a lot more in depth about Wyndham Clark in a bit, and including getting to hear from him. But what did you guys think about the LACC and Ricky? And my favorite part was him bitching about to the official that they were playing in the dark on Saturday. And I don't blame him. I mean, it looked ridiculous. So, but these are the little things that even Shane in an episode, maybe that's not your favorite, you get kind of these cool moments like that. But yeah, guys, what are your thoughts about the US Open and kind of Ricky's treatment? And then he gets the redemption story. He does get that win. What was it? Rocket Mortgage a few weeks later. Again, just another amazing kind of storyline or thing that kind of fell into these guys' lap that they get to show.
Yeah, that was great. That's another one with Rory, because Rory approached him in the workout.
That's right.
And then this is me being a golf writer and two, you know, all over everything. I did the press conference last week over Zoom with the match, and Rory's talking about like how great night golf is and playing under the lights. And I'm like, and then I just watched the Netflix episode and he's like bitching to Rory, like, this is bullshit. Like, I couldn't see. Now it was dark and they totally bungled that, the USJ. Yeah. Like they always do. But yeah, that was a great moment. Great moment. Yeah. And I'm surprised they let them in the trailer, because I went into one of those trailers last year for the players. Some guy from Hype Rice just wanted me to check it out and maybe do a story on it, which I never did. But they were telling me, like, these guys come in here to escape everyone. Like, this is the one spot on site where no one can get to the media, fans, autograph seekers, whatever. So kudos to the Netflix cameras getting in there US Open week and capturing that moment. That was amazing.
Yeah. They had the scene of on TV's Golf Channel and like Ricky missing that short putt on Saturday. Now it's Sunday. And I'm sure that was the Netflix magic working with the audio, talking about how disappointed Ricky must be. But that was still like the perfect setup for the Sunday episode. So that part was well done for sure.
Every time when you're on Full Swing that you turn the television on, they're talking about you. And every
it's
time
amazing.
You
get, it's amazing how that works.
Car, every time you get in the car and turn the radio on, it's like, Keegan Bradley struggling this year.
Shout out Rick Gaiman, by the way. He's got a bunch of clips this season.
Nice. And then Shane, didn't we discover, and I know we're about to get into a little quote Netflix magic as Joel Damon calls it, but didn't we discover last year that they make up one sort of I think they had like Tirico say something that he didn't say on air or something. they do.
Oh, yeah.
They can make it a little.
They're playing fast and loose.
They are. They're a little fast and loose. But again, it makes it good. Okay. All right. We talked about the first two episodes. Let's get into some of these character episodes. The first one, of course, being Joel Damon and Gino Bonelli. And that was kind of paired with Wyndham Clark.
With golf being like such a mental game, how do you feel about sports psychologists?
How do I feel about sports psychologists? I am definitely resistant to a sports psychologist.
Have you spoken to other tour players who do use sports psychologists?
Yeah, I've talked to plenty of them. They seem to be working for some of them.
And again, Shane, you know, in the first season, they had some interesting pairings where they kind of maybe forced it a little. This one, to me, felt amazing because you had, although again, as we learned from Joel, maybe they're going a little over the top with the mental health stuff. But the fact that you had this contrast with Wyndham Clark, you know, starting to work with a sports psychologist, Julie Elion, who's worked with a bunch of major champs. I remember doing a story with her a few years ago when she helped Jimmy Walker, of all people, win a PGA championship. So she has a ton of majors under her belt. Anyway, he starts working with her, and a few months later, he becomes this world beater. And then you have Joel Damon, who just is the classic, you know, male athlete. I don't need that help, blah, blah, blah. And you have his caddy, you know, pushing him to go to do it. But I thought there were some amazing moments in this, Shane. You know, the quote from Joel, I don't know if I'm exact quoting this, but being famous and shooting 76 is the worst thing in the world. I thought that really hit home.
Timely.
Yeah. Right. I mean, obviously, he became like a star from the first season, but it wasn't so rosy in season two when the cameras were following him around.
Yeah, and we're recording this Wednesday night, and my prediction is that Anthony Kim will shoot a 76 in his first round. So, for whatever that's worth.
You're a genius.
I thought, Alex, the pairing, like, sometimes the pairings are like, what are you doing? The pairing of Wyndham and Damon, and is it Bonelli? Is that how you say it? Or Bonelli?
Bonelli.
Bonelli, okay, yeah. Not like Surya Bonelli, the old figure skater.
The figure skater.
That pairing was like chef's kiss. It was so good. Right. It was, it worked beautifully. This episode, like, you know, I'm kind of a bait. Like, I never cry in real life, but a good movie will get me. I cried like three times during this episode. It was just like, I thought Wyndham was very open. You know, you kind of look at him and you're like, oh, I don't know what kind of subject he'll make. Maybe he'll be a little boring or something. He was great. And he didn't try to be anyone other than himself. He just tried to, you know, he just was very honest. He's kind of got like this Zen mentality now. But he was like, very open about the pain he went through. And I thought Netflix did a great job depicting that. And like the pairing of both of them having lost their moms at a pretty young age, very elegantly handled, I thought, by Netflix. It was beautifully done. And then, of course, you know, Damon and Gino, I'm just going to call him Gino because I will continue messing it up. But yeah, Damon and Gino are just, you just can't ask for better subjects. And it's just like incumbent on you not to screw it up when you get somebody that good. And for the second straight year, I thought they just kind of hit a home run with them. The scene in the airplane was gutting.
It's so weird. I don't even know why I like you. Damn it.
Am I shooting anything on Thursday?
Okay. I don't even care if it's on Thursday. As long as you're trying.
As you said, we'll listen to a bit. Maybe they overplayed like how low Damon went, or he's saying that maybe he wasn't quite as low as it made it seem, but you could see the catharsis in that moment. And it's like crazy that they could pull this off and act so genuinely toward each other in this emotional moment with a Netflix camera on them in the plane.
With other golf for tour, like Harry Higgs was on that plane, was he not?
Yeah, there must have been other. I don't think it was just them. Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
I did find it a little funny. I guess if cynical is the word, but you know, acting like, you know, my career's over and we're not going to make any money on a private plane. I thought that was a little funny.
Well, maybe it was his last ride.
It was fantastic. It was, it was their last, they thought it would be their last private jet ride. And that's why they were so much.
Well, to that point, the airplane scene was amazing. And we asked, or I think Shane might've asked Joel and Gino about why they're able to be so vulnerable on camera. And here's what they had to say.
That's a hard question. I think it was real. Nothing felt ungenuine. It's just that we opened people to be with us while we were being real, I suppose.
I guess I don't know how to be any other way. I think I'm pretty much am who I am. I mean, sometimes when I read Shane Ryan's old books, it makes me nervous about some of the stuff that he has out there. But we are who we are, and we don't have anything to hide either. Like, I mean, we want people along for when we win a couple events and the victory party's raging. You might as well come along for the not so great times too. But we just are who we are, and the cameras have to be rolling and catch us in good moments and bad moments.
All right, so that was amazing. Obviously, there was an ultimatum from Gino there too. And so we asked Joel, did he actually end up seeking a little mental game help? Here's what he had to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, the guy I did chat with, great guy, wasn't for me.
Oh boy.
Fine. I have found someone soon afterwards. I mean, it was a small Snapchat and snap. What I'm trying to say, it was a small snap
shot.
I was gonna say Snapchat, like I'm this young Z or whatever. Snapshot in time that, like, it wasn't great, but it wasn't that bad for that long, I would say. So but I had been trying to find someone for a long time. I had chatted with plenty of different players about who they talked to. I had done, like, this wasn't like this, like, it looks like it was an ultimatum on the plane, but this has been a long journey for myself to figure out, you know, what route I wanted to go and what I was doing. So I did find a guy, started working with him in the fall. He's awesome, he's great. I played really well in the fall. My attitude is good. My process is way better day to day. And I mean, golf hasn't exactly been there this calendar year, but we're having more fun and it's closer. I'm more excited to get out there and practice today.
Yeah, I'd say I am very proud of Joel. And when we started talking about it, he made a conscious effort, and his attitude and work ethic has been awesome. And we have had some good tournaments, and even when we have some not so good tournaments, it's been pleasant, and we feel like we're making progress and getting better, and that's all we can really ask. So very happy with where we are currently.
All right, and then as I kind of alluded to before, I forgot who asked him about, I think CP or someone, you or Steve, you asked him about finding out the June 6th news, and there's this scene where he's in a Waffle House with Gino, and you're like, were you really in a Waffle House and looking at your phone?
That was the trailer is them like on their phone, like, oh, and then the June 6th news came. And the reason why they were looking at the phone is actually one of the funniest bits that we got out of all these interviews. So check that out.
That was a different scene where we were doing something on phone that did make it appear.
I don't even remember that.
It was just a trailer that just came out.
Oh, see, I haven't even seen that. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of magic in Netflix. We'll say there.
This is what the people are gonna wonder about. So
in that particular scene, I was actually applying Joel a job to be employed by Waffle House. That's what we're doing on the phone.
And I got an email 2 days later, and he did it all from Phoenix area. For 3 months, I got an email every week about when I get an interview for a job at Waffle House.
I'm so glad I asked that question.
That's amazing.
I told him if we keep playing that way, he's going to need a job.
He legitimately filled it out, and I have emails from Waffle House asking if I can come in for an interview.
Well, you got a fallback plan then. That's great. Yeah.
I was gonna say it's an ego boost that they wanted you, right? I mean, they could have.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. My resume is not great, so the fact that I, you know, it apparently was good enough.
All right, we got a lot of great sound bites, obviously from Joel Damon and Gino. No surprise here; they're two of the most entertaining people on tour. Finally, we asked him about would he come back for a third season. Obviously, he's had two pretty deep dives. And you know, you see like the highs last year where he was having a great year and he was getting famous, and now kind of the lows, not having a good season, you know, the fame maybe catching up for him, up to him. Here's what Joel had to say about that.
I feel like there's going to be a trilogy of Joel Damon. Like here's the fun Joel that kind of is like, oh, I love being 70th in the world, you know? And now it's like, man, I'd love to be 70th in the world. And, you know, down here, and you know, after after we win this year, I feel like that's going to kind of complete the series.
I was going to say there's a lot. We have a lot on our plate. I mean, I love being a dad and trying to be a good husband. That just takes time as well. So I'm gonna let them chase me around when the golf gets real good, and we'll show all the fun stuff again. But I think for the most part, we're gonna be laying a little bit more low this year. But like I said, if they're around when we get our win this year, then come on and we'll show you, you know, how we're back at the top.
All right, great stuff again from Joel and Gino. Anything else you guys want to say about them, or should we talk about a little more about Wyndham, who was also featured in this episode?
I mean, Gino's wife, like, getting in the mix, she sort of was like a very important part of that episode. I wanted to ask him about that, what that's like. I don't need any more Joel episodes, but I need another Gino's wife episode. bring her back.
Yeah. I just want to comment before we move on, Alex, how funny it is that these interviews we did were the press junket from Netflix, which is the idea of promoting the show.
Right.
And Damon was like, here's all the ways they pull the wool over your eyes.
Yeah. Well, he gives it to us straight, at least. Yeah. And you could kind of hear in his voice that he might be reluctant about doing it again. He kind of says, 100%, like, when I win, I'll let the cameras chase me around. But, you know, until then, maybe I'm going to lay low a little. But it's good to hear he is, you know, has talked to some people. Maybe that, because again, nowadays, like, that seems to be a big edge for some of these guys. So speaking of that, Wyndham Clark, again, starts working with Julie Ellion. First few months later, he wins down in Charlotte, you know, a huge signature event. And then, of course, he wins the U.S. Open when he's still kind of a surprise. Heck, he was still a surprise when he won it. Pebble, he was 100-1 odds, even though he was coming off, you know, this monster 2-win season. But Shane, I know you asked him about being kind of like a natural on camera. Let's hear what he had to say about that.
You know, I don't really know where it came from. I have no acting abilities or past. It's not like I did anything. I think a little bit, honestly, I have to give a credit to, like, Ricky Fowler a little bit, because and when I was at Oklahoma State, Ricky was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and he'd come to Oklahoma State and kind of talk with us, and there'd be some camera crews every once in a while. And then as I got out on tour, I always saw people following him and the fame that came with that, and I almost saw what it's like. And I think because I saw a good role model, it was almost like, in my mind, it was like, okay, when I now get into that champ, you know, into a top player, it's almost like I moved into that setting versus not being comfortable. Like, I instantly was comfortable. And, you know, I think I learn, I'm a very visual learner. And so I watch a lot of movies, watch a lot of TV shows. And then I watch a lot of the top players in any sport, how they handle being in front of the camera, interviews, post-round stuff. And I just kind of learned. And next, you know, I find myself in front of the cameras, and it just kind of came naturally. So I don't really have anything to really tell you other than I just learned through other people, and I guess it's turned out good if you're complimenting me on it.
Yeah, for sure. And Shane, yeah, I mean, you really thought he came off great. I know, and I agree. I mean, he said he has no formal acting training, but he kind of looked like he did.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, you know, we all perform in various aspects for a job, even like just doing a podcast, right? You're in front of a mic, in front of a camera. But it's like when the camera, there's been a couple times over the last 2 years when Dan Rappaport is near me and the Netflix cameras come, and I just feel myself freezing up and like unable to behave like a human being. It's like, please don't do this. Right. There was one moment at Oak Hill where it was like me, like KVV and Kyle Porter and I think Joel Beal, and the Netflix cameras came and we had to have this conversation. And I remember even watching the Oak Hill, like, I remember it being so bad. I was like, please don't let them have put that in there, because I'll look like an idiot. And it was like a huge relief when I got through the episode. It was like, not there. But so my point is, I think, like, it's crazy how difficult. It's one thing to sit in front of a camera and talk for a seated interview, but when it's you and your coaches eating dinner, or it's you and all people doing stuff, it's very difficult to act natural for these guys who are professional golfers. Yeah. Rory is insane at it. Rory, it's almost pathological how good he is at it. Like, it makes you look at him and go, are you a secret psycho, like a sociopath? Like, you're amazing at, like, being so real, to the point that you're wondering what's real and what's not. But Wyndham Clark was like not someone I would expect to be good at it. He was completely natural. And he was like, yeah, like as you just heard from that clip, like his coaches weren't. Like he had to be like, guys, just chill out, just be yourself.
Right, right.
I'm
right.
Like, that's amazing that you can do that. It's actually amazing. It's not a skill that most people have without really having to work at it.
I think it comes down to being like super comfortable in your own skin. And like I think a couple of years ago, Wyndham Clark might not have been like that, but you know, with the all the mental coaching, that's where he is, and that's sort of unlocked this great talent that he's had in his game. So, you know, it was cool for that to come across in the show. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, it was funny because we asked him about the mental stuff. And I know this must have been Sam Wyman's favorite episode because he's the big mental guy.
Big mental guy.
Yeah. But anyway, have a listen to what Wyndham said, because like he did say that he had some veto power on what they put in. And obviously he didn't want to give away all his secrets. So have a listen to that.
Well, for sure. I will say there is definitely stuff we left out that we talked about beforehand. She's like, okay, well, we are working on these few things right now, and these are maybe a little easier. And we didn't give the full picture. Let's just say that. So there's stuff that we are working on, because that is important to me. And I feel like it's somewhat of my competitive advantage to be able to have someone like Julie. And I know, you know, other guys that she works with, they never really mention that they're working with her. So they clearly feel that way. But I thought if we did it the right way, it wouldn't give away too much. So,
All right. And just again, the luck, the fortune that you need to have a great documentary come about. This is 2 years in a row that they've latched cameras onto players and who have gone on to win the US Open. So Chad Mum had a funny answer about that as well.
We can, if you come into the show, we can't promise you a Masters, but we can promise you a US Open.
All right. So anybody who's, you know, on the fence, if you want to win a US Open, you might want to sign up. If there is a third season of Full Swing of This, we'll ask Chad and Warren about that in a bit as well. But first, now we get into the Tom Kim episode.
All right, are we ready for this? The best drive in golf, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go.
All right, so we got Tom Kim, 20-year-old. He's won twice the year before, the first player under 21 to win twice on the tour since Tiger Woods. All these high expectations. I was kind of interested to know why he would even participate in this show. And here's what he had to say about that.
I think it's just a different platform to reach people. And it's almost like for me personally, I use it as to really show who I am. Because I feel like a lot of the fans just see us on the golf course. They don't see what goes behind the scenes. And I'm a big sports documentary guy. I'm a huge fan about, you know, watching, you know, the best guys, what they do, and just how they go about life. Not really. Like, yeah, it's interesting what they do on their, you know, their platform, but it's also, I feel like it's the most important parts are how they do outside stuff, you know, how they act or how, what they do, or basically what they do for themselves to be able to do what they want to do best. And I feel like it's, you know, as a kid and even now to this day, I'm very intrigued by that, by other athletes. And I think it's a cool opportunity to do the same for me, is, you know, especially me being Korean, and when I grew up in Asia, seeing the PGA Tour felt so far away. And it would have, I think now with the world where it's at, where the Netflix is, you know, is reachable to all the audiences, I feel like it can, you know, it can touch a lot of junior golfers and a lot of people in my shoes when I was younger and when I wanted to play the PGA Tour. And I feel like it can inspire a lot of people. And I think that was just the whole decision base. And I've always wanted to do something like that. So it's really cool.
Okay. So that makes sense. He wants us to get to know him better. And it's funny, CP, we were on the call with him. You know, he says, everybody thinks of me as this like smiling young guy. I'm a lot more serious than that. He was pretty serious on the call, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. I'm so shocked at the, you know, when they were playing up that, when he went into the mud thing, I just remember that as being like a really funny I hate to use the word cute, but like cute right. little Tom yeah. Kim moment. I had no idea. He was like back home in Korea. That was like a you know, people were not happy with me. I was like,
yeah, it was like taboo or something.
Yeah.
Kind
of create. I mean, I know cultural differences and all, but when that happened, it was like, this is hilarious.
Right.
Obviously crazy move to go in and not even find your ball. But yeah, to hear that, I was like, geez, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah. That was another moment, like Shane was saying, with like the JT chip. Not that I was there, but we all saw that a million times. When it happened, I was like, oh yeah, if Tom Kim went into the mud, there's just so many things that happen in a year that get
refreshed. Strong year of content, for sure.
Strong year of content. Shane, we've been talking about some of the forced narratives, and you said, you know, Tom Kim, he has to play well in the majors, yes. which is ridiculous. He's 20 years old, obviously. I mean, I guess if he wanted to, you know, win at a younger age than Tiger or something, I guess it would have been, he had to do it that year, but it didn't happen for him. But to me, they kept hammering home, whether it was Amanda Renner or other people, that he's a global superstar and this and that. And like, I don't know, to me, it was like, could he be one? Yes. But I thought they were jumping the gun just a little, Shane.
Yeah, 100%. This was a jump the gun episode. Like, there were just so many parts that were so funny.
Yeah,
where it's like they show a montage of Spieth and Nicklaus and Tiger winning their first majors, as tried to make the point that you really don't have that much time. If you want to be great, you've got to win now. But they were still older than Tom Kim when they right. won. He was still younger than them. And so it was like,
right.
But it's funny. It's like, you know, we work for the internet. We get this. If you're going to pitch a story, like the whole, why yeah. should I care? Why should I care? Right. So it's clear that they have this thing in full swing where each episode they've got to have a storyline. Alex Fitzpatrick wants to break out from the shadow of his brother, right? You come to Tom Kim and you're like, Tom Kim's a great personality. He's really funny. And like, and he's very good. We want to do a Tom Kim episode. Ah, but what's the, you know, they can't just stop there and do the Tom Kim episode.
Right.
They have to
right.
do what's the story. And so this is what I wrote in my review. It's like, when you force a story like this, that you have to play well in the majors, well, then you want your trajectory to be a triumph at the end. So what do you have to do? Well, he finishes T16 at the Masters, which is really effing good. Yeah. And then you have to pretend that's bad. You have to pretend that's right. bad. Then at the US Open, he finishes T8, okay, yeah. which is really good. But the problem is you want to peak with Hoylake with a T2. So yeah. you can't mention the US Open. You go back and watch that. The US yeah. Open is not mentioned in that episode. That's right. They just gotta leave that. You gotta leave that down because that doesn't fit the story. And then you have to do the Hoylake thing and make that the triumph, which it was a great tournament. But that, you know, see what I'm saying? Like, you have to manipulate so much to fit in this dumb story that you didn't even need, in my opinion. Now, it goes back to the thing I said before, though. Of even amidst this, when I'm at my most, like, God, why did you even do this? There's moments like Tom Kim riding on a motorized cooler in his house.
Yeah.
Tom Kim breaking accidentally into the champion's locker room and the attendant just staring daggers at him.
Yeah.
Tom Kim accidentally parking in the champion's parking lot. Like, it's just like, there's so much good stuff there. There's so much funny stuff. And so part of me is just like, you have my permission just to do the Tom Kim episode. You don't have to like right. throw this other yeah. crap on top of it. You don't need it at all. But
yeah, right. let it breathe. And they like also force the whole like, you know, people don't take him seriously. Like, he, you know, by all accounts, he's buddies with Scheffler. He's buddies with Spieth. Like, yeah. he goes over to Spieth's house and, like, helps watch the baby. Like, right. it's not as if they see him as some sort of outsider, but that's sort of how it's portrayed. Some of those moments were great. Like, you know, Scheffler messing with him at Augusta. But,
yeah, I'm
with you, Shane. Just let Tom Kim be Tom Kim and, like, let us learn his personality organically. That would have been just fine.
Yeah. And of course, again, once again, they do stumble into somewhat of a triumphant finish because, you know, he doesn't win the Open, but he does finish runner up, although he's a million shots behind. It was, you know, they don't mention that. They barely mention that. But he does it on this, you know, hurt ankle. And I guess this was their kind of moment to make golf like, you know, what's the other, the F1 show, Drive to Survive, where the drama of like the dangers of, you know, F1 driving. Tom Kim, you know, sprained his ankle, although he didn't even do it playing golf. He did it somehow at his rental home and in England.
These pro golfers and the rental.
So gutsy.
How slippery are these floors in rental homes? Every injury is in a rental home.
Always in a rental home. You're right.
Tom Kim's was hilarious. It only happened to him where he got like his foot wedged between boards or something.
right.
It was like, yeah. It was a classic. Like only Tom Kim could have hurt himself this way.
Right. But you're right, CP. It's DJ. It's Rory playing soccer at the rental home. It's Tom Kim. But I don't know. Again, it was gutsy. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, they went a little far probably with that angle as well. But we asked Tom about that. He talked about it. He said it kind of, right, CP, it said it helped his swing, even though he kind of did that weird follow through. I liked when he showed in his house that he has that giant Thomas the Train. He says it was a gift. Yes. It's not like he bought it for himself. That would be even funnier. But but to Shane's point, I think we did get to see some fun sides of him. Although, again, it was crazy when we talked to him. He's like, I'm a big documentary guy. I want people to, you know I'm a serious guy. And I didn't know that there was, you know, a negative portrayal of Tom Kim out there.
I mean, he started the most visible part of his golf career at the President's Cup, splitting his pants twice in one week. I remember that. But right. I don't know. That's weird that he was like that. I kind of wish I had been there for that one.
Yeah.
He's kind of a goofy guy, but it's a cool part of his personality. I think he should lean into it, if anything.
Yeah. You know, it was weird because we were talking about this in season one that we kind of thought Colin Morikawa didn't come off great, that he was too like robotic business, you know, focusing on like his image and everything. Tom Kim doesn't seem like that in the show or when you watch him, but that's a little more of like, he seemed like when we talked to him, he had the Nike hat, the Nike shirt. And he was like, I'm a serious guy. I want to inspire young kids. It was all great what he said, but it was just a little different than what we've seen from him portrayed either in the show or when we just watch him at the President's Cup or whatever. I will say too, it's kind of interesting, and this might have been a conscious decision by him, especially when we've seen some of these, you know, Asian players before him. But like, there's like, I don't think really any mention of his parents, and no, it was funny none. Because right, and in the first season, you know, our favorite character in the whole show was Merle Tigala, and then obviously you had the Tony Finau's dad as well. And in this show, you know, you had Justin Thomas's dad, of course, because he's on the scene, and you had the Fitzpatrick parents, of course. They had to, the kids are, but like, it was weird that there was no parental presence, especially with Tom Kim being 20 years old. So yeah, that was interesting to me. No, anyway, all right. I guess nobody else thought it was interesting.
I guess I didn't really think of that.
Yeah. Well, we talked about Merle Tigala so much in the first season that I guess I was kind of hoping for another Merle and we didn't get it. Okay. Well, anyway, as CP mentioned, he really regretted this going in the mud thing. I did not realize we knew it was a big viral moment, but I didn't realize it was going to be like this lasting stain on his legacy more than even just his clothes. But other than that, he sounded very happy with how it came out. He sounded very happy with the fact that he was kind of given his own episode, which is pretty high honor, but not that he doesn't deserve it. He could be the next big superstar. But anyway, here's a clip of how he thought his episode went down.
I really don't know exactly what I'm getting myself into a little bit. I'm not going to lie to you, but no, it's I knew that guys who came out in season one, it definitely transitioned into a bigger part of their career in fame-wise, just because Netflix is a platform where it's literally reachable worldwide. And golf, and I speak this very confidently that I lived in Asia and I traveled around the world, and I know how interested people are about golf and about the best players in the world, what they do, and what, you know, how are their, you know, lives, how do they go about daily lives. And I think it's just a part of it. And I think it's, for me personally, to be honest, whether it comes or not, you know, I'm happy to be on the show, and I think it was really cool. I thought my episode was really good. I thought it showed parts of that. You know, I think at the start when I first came out on tour, a lot of people thought that I was just, you know, smiling all the time and happy to be out here, but I'm actually really not that way. I'm a big grinder. I work really hard, and you know, I have a lot of grit. So I can't, like, it's premiering in a few days, it's coming out, and I just I don't know what to expect. So I'm really excited to see, you know, what's ahead.
All right. So that was interesting to hear him. You know, it's funny, guys, because some of the people, I don't think we, who was it, hasn't watched their episode yet? Wyndham. Wyndham has not watched his own episode yet. But these other people seem, you know, happy with it, happy with their episodes, which is, you know, interesting to see. But Tom Kim was especially pleased with his episode. So I'm glad. I'm happy. He'll be happy about that.
You know, Alex, he's like, I want to be taken seriously. Like, the lingering thing is going to be a gif of him riding that cooler around.
Yeah,
that's going to be the only thing that, like, the internet takes from that.
Exactly. What is it? The Arrested Development meme? They're all like, we demand to be taken seriously. What
exactly.
Wizards or whatever. Magicians. That's what
they're... Exactly. all right. Let's get to the Fitzpatrick's episode, which arguably was the best. I know Joel and Wyndham was very strong. I'd say this one, and then, you know, the Ryder Cup one. I'd say probably even the first Ryder Cup one, when they reveal the picks, would probably be my top three. But guys, what did you think about it? My first note was just great episode, and I had back to great storylines and nothing forced. And again, Shane, it's like you said, you have two brothers. One gets famous, the other one's younger. It's just kind of a natural thing. But where they strike gold is, you know, he ends up not only qualifying for the British Open, Alex Fitzpatrick, but being in contention. I mean, maybe not to win, because again, Brian Harman's running away with it. And, you know, full swing, conveniently forgets about Brian Harman completely. Yeah. But yeah, Shane, what did you think about this episode? It might have been my favorite episode overall.
Dan, thank you. I'm alongside Alex Fitzpatrick, who we just saw birdie three of his last four holes, tied the second lowest round ever at Hoylake. And what a performance you have put in. How satisfied are you in this, your Open debut?
Yeah, I remember the interview questions were, you know, Alex, how do you feel like today went? It wasn't like, Alex, how do you feel like you beating your brother? It wasn't any of that.
Alex, tell me what it's like.
Yeah, great episode. A great episode. And what I would say is they did strike gold. It was a crazy ending and awesome for them. But what's good about just a nice storyline is that it didn't matter. It would have been a great episode if he failed, right? If he just, if he was just like kept failing. So I love this episode. I think the Fitzpatricks are sneaky, amazing personalities. Matt is like, has this quiet British wit about him that his dad also has. Yeah. And what's so funny to me about it is if you had this dynamic with your typical American golfer, Chase Koepka, right? Someone like that, you would never get them to like be as honest as Alex Fitzpatrick was. They would pretend it wasn't a big deal and all this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, but Alex Fitzpatrick just comes right out and says, I love my brother, but it's awful to be in his shadow. Right. But the cool thing that runs throughout it is the British, especially like, I would say, especially like the upper middle class British, have this sort of sense of humor, which is all about daggering the ego at every single second. So not only do you get this intense honesty, but like Matt Fitzpatrick will make fun of his brother, right? Yep. In very sensitive areas, like their friends will make fun of them. They'll bring it up. They'll talk about it. It's a very cool, like if you are in this unenviable position of being Alex Fitzpatrick, you couldn't handle it better than he actually does in real life.
Right.
He acknowledges the pain. He's got like that girlfriend who's American when they're talking about playing together on the tour one day. And he said, well, I'm not there yet. And she goes, oh, is your brother available? It's hilarious that she can make that joke. And you can see the way he laughs. It's like, I feel like he fell in love with her like 20% more just because she made that joke. Right. Cause it's like such a British thing to do. So they were great, man. I just thought the episode was fantastic. The dad made me laugh. I think I left it thinking I could watch a Fitzpatrick family reality show. I don't watch reality TV, but I'd watch that one.
Keeping up with the Fitzes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great point, Shane, about, and I hate to hand it to the Euros, but they are so naturally funny. Like you said, the Koepka comparison is perfect. It's like the Americans just have such a hard time I don't know what it is, just being naturally like just chill and like screwing around, you know. Anytime they make a joke, it's like it almost feels forced a little bit for the cameras, especially. So I couldn't agree more. I regrettably could not agree more that the British people are very funny.
I do get a bit of like a too cool for school vibe from Fitz now, though, from Matt. Like, you know, you're sort of this really nerdy golf pro who, you know, won the US Open, had a great tournament, very good career. But like, you know, you should be a little nicer to your brother. And like, I don't know, like that's definitely the British humor. And I wish we were, you know, so not sensitive like that as a culture. But yeah, I don't know. Fitz could be like a little cooler. He needs to be like knocked down a couple bridges. I get it. He's got the hot American fiance, Jersey girl, by the way. But like,
wow, didn't know
come
that.
Come on, dude. Like, you're still like a tour pro who wears braces and like you're a math nerd. Like,
Skechers.
You're not that cool.
Skechers, yeah. No, you know, I was saying there was no Merle Tagala, but maybe Rachel Kuhn, is that how you pronounce it? Maybe she's the breakout star because she's obviously Alex Fitzpatrick's girlfriend. She's an aspiring LPGA player, and they're both, I must say, Wake Forest people, Shane. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, it's, I noticed that.
And
yeah,
they showed the Wake Forest campus a little, and they were practicing there. So I really, maybe that's why this is my favorite episode, but a little biased here. But she was great. They were great. I loved whenever he finished, you know, Matt would be there or vice versa. And it didn't seem staged. Again, it really did not.
Yeah.
You know, they're keeping tabs on each other. And yeah, but just kind of amazing. I think, by the way, shout out to our I can't believe we haven't done it yet, our former colleague, Dan Rappaport, who really, I mean, all kidding aside, does a tremendous job kind of pushing the storylines. I thought he's, you know, again, biased, but I thought he's by far the best of the talking heads on this show. And he, I think, makes the point at one point that Alex has never beaten Matt in any real competition. And then he does it at the Open Championship. Like that's amazing. So what a great episode. I wanted to play a clip from Warren Smith on kind of just how they work with players and how they were able to reestablish the momentum after such a strong season one to get things going again in season two and, you know, get the help that they need and the participation from people like Matt and Alex Fitzpatrick.
I mean, I think every season is difficult on these shows. I think you always hope that the momentum will continue, but you've got to remember we finished filming at the Tour Championships in August and then picked up again in February. And I think because we're in the edit process, taking it through and getting it on air, you think you see these guys every day and you think, oh, we're going to pick it up. But, you know, they're playing tournaments and tournaments and tournaments. So when we arrived back in, I don't know if it was Phoenix, the first tournament back, there is a lot of, hey, it's us again. And, you know, the team and the producers and all of those things. So, but what's great is, you know, Chad, you know, and the team done an amazing job with that relationship. And, you know, enough people picked it up and went, you know, we want to roll with it. And lucky for us that, you know, the show dropped pretty quickly after that. And the rest is history. So yeah, it was tough at times, as all of these shows are. They're never easy. But we luckily had some pretty good stories to be able to follow.
All right. So with that, let's move to these final three episodes. The final two are really all about the Ryder Cup.
When players turn professional, I would say the majority of them, if you ask them what their career goals are, one is to win a major, two is to play on a Ryder Cup team.
Are you concerned about the Ryder Cup?
Am I excited about it?
Concerned.
Oh, concerned? Yeah, obviously. I mean, I want to make the Ryder Cup more than anything.
Which has been coming up throughout the season. You know, we talked to Chad Mum about that, how it kind of was a long arc throughout the whole season, little snippets here or there. But we build to this sixth episode, which is all about the people trying to make the team. And they leave it on the ultimate cliffhanger, of course. We'll get into that in a bit. That is clearly the scene of the entire season. But I just want to say, you know, Chad spoke about how they had to work on this for a long time, that without the consent from Zach Johnson and then followed by Luke Donald, they wouldn't have had really anything. I mean, they needed to get in these team rooms. And actually, we just got off another call with Steve Stricker, a former Ryder Cup captain. And he said that the Netflix guys were great, very professional, as you'd expect, but like out of sight, like that it didn't bother anything at all. So that's great to hear that, because if this series does keep going, hopefully we'll get even more participation by these guys. But anyway, here's a clip about from Chad Mum talking about how important the Ryder Cup was to season two.
I think it's helpful that we have, like, I mean, obviously we have a producer based in London, a British producer. We have a team based in America. So, you know, we kind of came out of the gate like, hey, we want to like be on both teams and really like give both teams a ton of like space to tell their story. And I think there was some real credibility given sort of the fact that the show sort of produced dual out of New York and out of London. And so I think that actually legitimately helped. And look, it took a year or more to really get them on board with giving us that amount of access to the Ryder mm-hmm. Cup. And, you know, that's for obvious reasons. It's sort of the crown jewel of those organizations. And, you know, it's every 2 years, it's really special. And so, you know, but once they decided to come in and open the doors to us, you know, they both agreed that like everything Zach does, Luke's going to do, vice versa. And so, you know, we started filming with both captains pretty early in the season. And they delivered, you know, they every time we asked to come over, they opened the doors and, yes. you know, and it turned into something that we maybe thought would be like a great season ending storyline, but it actually ended up becoming like a narrative that mattered like the entire year. And you right. can see us signposting that stuff in early episodes, you know, even in like episode two, I think there's talk of the Ryder Cup and we start to like plant these seeds about just how much it matters to these players. And the big benefit for us for the Ryder Cup is, again, you show up at a major, there's 120 players, 150 players in the field. We can only follow so many of them. You know, some of them miss the cut. Some of them finish tied 13th. Like, we really can't do much with it. The Ryder Cup was brilliant because it was actually, we knew every single person was either going to win or lose. You're right. either going to have heartbreak, joy. There was no T13th at the Ryder Cup. And, right. you know, and to be able to, like, have a head-to-head stakes like that, where there was literally 12 head-to-head matches on Sunday. And to be able to know that there was a moment in time of real drama when the captains were going to make their picks, that we actually knew where the cameras should be for those phone calls. You know, that's just the kind of stuff that made that story special. And you know, we couldn't be more grateful for sort of everybody involved for like letting us lean in and actually giving us the access and delivering, because, you know, it certainly comes to life on the screen.
Okay, let's get into the pick scenes, guys, because it kind of incorporates a lot of the stuff we see in these episodes. We see Ricky Fowler, we see Justin Thomas, we see Jordan Spieth, and then, of course, we see Keegan Bradley, who I think is going to be maybe the most talked about character from this show. Steve, I know you were there when we talked to Keegan. What was your takeaway from kind of his whole presence in this show?
Yeah, this was my favorite episode. You know, as he told us, Myers, like, he has always been reluctant to open up his entire career, which is sort of crazy. You know, he's been one of the top 25 American golfers for the last 10-15 years, and right. You know, he's felt like he wasn't able to open up, and doing this and especially in his most vulnerable state, like, I mean, that took a lot to know that there was a good chance he was not making this team. And you know, he put the faith into the process to let the cameras in. And I really respect Keegan after this. We said this after talking to him, like, I didn't really know what to make of Keegan before this episode, and talking to him, you know, I thought he was maybe a little bit of a dick, but I think it's just, he had a shield up for all these years. Mm-hmm. And it truly feels like now that's kind of off a little bit. So I respect the hell out of him.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. He said, in when we talked to him, that he has such a nervous personality on the course. Yeah. So I think that's maybe why he comes off as that. And it's, you know, he's always doing these, you know, fidgeting around, and he's not yeah. smiling and this and that. But yeah, you know, off the course, God, you could not seem like a better guy. And how he handled it all was really incredible. Let's listen to how we, you know, before we listen to the clip, Shane and CP, from seeing the episode, and because we talked to him about it, it did seem like he almost had no chance, which kind of seems unfair. Like, the deck was stacked against him. You have these scenes of, you know, Zach Johnson having dinner with JT and Jordan Spieth.
I can't believe that was in the show.
Staying in the house with them. And like, yeah. you know, we get it. Like, there's going to be, you know, these friendships that kind of, you know, supersede stuff. But God, it really, that was almost tough to watch from that perspective, because you knew Keegan just wasn't going to get maybe a fair shake there.
To see the narrative, like the preconceived narrative, literally play out on right. television was absolutely wild. I can't believe, I know that Netflix kind of has all the power here, and but if I was Zach Johnson, I'd be like, you can't put that scene in. Then like joking or Spieth being like, Zach, who's got a chance to be on the team at this dinner table? It's like, oh my God, everything people said about the boys club thing was like 100% true based off of these few episodes. Go ahead, Shane.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry. Like Steve, this was my favorite episode. And for me, it was all because of JT. I was like, I came away thinking, like, deeply impressed with his, like, Machiavellian social skills. And I actually mean it as a compliment. And, like, there were so many times throughout it. CP, just like you said, he was doing the thing where he ingratiated himself with Zach Johnson in case he needed a pick.
Yep.
But the way he did it was so insanely deft in that he would joke about doing it. The scene that I will never forget, that I swear to God, it will stay with me because I don't know. I just love this kind of stuff. Will stay with me forever is when they were together and Justin Thomas said, in front of Zach Johnson, I'm in a sticky situation with Zach because I don't want to seem like I'm kissing his ass, but I do want to kiss his ass.
Yeah.
And he said it with a smile, but he's like, but I'm like, that is so brilliant because you're taking a situation that's potentially awkward. You can't actually nakedly just advocate for yourself, right? Because that would look bad and even Zach Johnson would flag it. But he's joking about doing it to kind of take the edge off it, but he's still doing it.
Right.
He's still doing it. And like the scene at the dinner table that you talked about, he makes this offhand little joke, which is very funny, to be fair, where he's like, Zach, I saw you at the range the other day. Your swing looks incredible. and you know what he's doing. And he's making a joke about pumping him up. But right. What's happening throughout the year? He's literally staying in the house with the guy. He's literally dragging him in. He's probably his connection in some way to the cool kids club, to people like Spieth and Fowler. Yep. He's making it incredibly difficult in a way that I swear to God, I admire. Like, I'm like, that's good, fucking fair play to you, son.
Right,
like,
he's
making it very hard for him to say no. And just like, Chris, you nailed it on the head. And I actually wrote this in my review. Keegan Bradley never had a chance. Like, there was just, and again, I want to put this in context. I still think JT was the right pick. Even if he had stunk and gone 0-3 at the Ryder Cup, I still think it was very justified to pick him based on his history. But he stacked the deck so far in his direction with that stuff. And to see that play out and to see the way Netflix captured it was like, this is like the point of your existence, full swing. Like, this is what you're here for, to show us what he's doing. And then Bradley just being like, well, I don't really know these guys. Right. Like, it's like, this is life. This is the world. This is the real world, right? That their personal relationships matter. It was unbelievable. Yep. And I came away being like, Justin Thomas, you're a genius in a way I didn't expect.
Right. Crafty genius. Well, we talked to Keegan about it, and here's what he had to say kind of about the whole situation. And again, once again, he handled everything like a pro.
That was the call, right? That wasn't some scripted.
No, that was the call.
And then there was another one. That's the real call, right?
Yeah. So I it was the day after the Tour Championship. I was expecting to hear that night at the Tour Championship. And then I got a text from Zach saying, oh, we're going to call everybody tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So I got home. It was the end of the year, so we couple drinks at home, and I woke up not feeling my best, was tired, and I couldn't really sleep. I never sleep on Sunday nights ever, and but this night especially. And I woke up to I don't know if panicky phone call, but a phone call like, hey, hurry up, they're on their way, you have to get ready. And I thought this meant this is the call that I'm going to make the team. Why would they send a crew? And I woke my wife up and I'm like, you got to get ready. The cameras are coming. I said, for the first time, I let my brain go to, holy shit, this is the call.
Right.
And I don't know why that was just what I was thinking for why they were rushing the call over. Mm-hmm. So it was heartbreaking. I mean, it's the only way I can put it. Like it was devastating, and that was the real call. I haven't seen it, that part of the show yet, so it's gonna be to, yeah. So I and that was real, and it was tough.
All that we really saw was, you know, I mean, it was brief reaction from you and Jillian. It looked like she didn't take it well either. What sort of happened like right after? Because that was the only moment we were able to see.
It was the only time I was with the cameras where I was like, all right, boys, like, I'm done. We were sad for weeks. I mean, we still are. I don't know if I've ever seen my wife, Jill, so bummed out. She wasn't, she just was really bummed out. If I win or I miss the cut, there's no difference in her behavior. She wasn't like disappointed she didn't get to go. She was bummed out about the journey because she knew I'd started this sort of process a year prior, a two-year process. And I don't think it crossed her mind that I wasn't going to be. We took our honeymoon as well to Rome. So it was like sort of like this full circle.
Yeah.
And there were a few times where I was like having to give her, you know, this has never happened in our relationship of golf stuff where I'm having to be like, hey, it's fine. Like, don't worry. Like she was really, I was shocked. I had never seen her that emotional about anything in golf, whether it was happiness or sadness. And it was sad. Yeah.
All right. Speaking of handling like a pro though, the actual scene, how it went down, you know, you watch it and you're like, oh, this is really cool. But to hear Chad Mumm talk about what went into capturing this scene where Zach Johnson is going to call all these people, I mean, it is unbelievable. So you got to listen to Chad Mumm breaking down how this amazing scene, because like Shane said, I mean, this is what it was all about. You know, the drama behind the scenes, this and that, the stuff that we never saw. We know they get the call, but we, you know, to actually see it all unfold, here's what all went into it, according to Chad Mumm.
We had our crew filming in Frisco, and we had a crew in Florida and Jupiter that had to get from Keegan Bradley's house over to Ricky Fowler's house, which is like, they're like 2 miles away. So how do we be there for the call and then get to Ricky's house and get it set up and capture that moment? It was a wild amount of coordination. I mean, it was, we had three film crews in three different time zones. You know, I'm out here in LA, it's 6 a.m. as this is all going down. I felt like I was in like a war room or something, because, you know, we're sitting here in this conference. I'm looking at texts from everybody and everything's firing back and forth and we're hopeful and trying to get it. And it was just like this whole thing happened in about a 25-minute period. Everybody's teed up. We feel like we've got all the you know, cameras and the crews and the positions that we need to. But now it's like, it's all going to happen. It's going to be bang, bang. And, you know, the idea that we built up this entire season of the show to like pay off at this moment. I mean, we had multiple episodes kind of hinging on this happening. And on our kind of mantra filming this thing is, if it's not on camera, it never happened. Our producer in Frisco sends me a text sort of 6:07 a.m. And he sends me the list of the picks. And so we see the list and Keegan's name's not on it. And it's heartbreaking for us, because Keegan is the greatest, you know, dad and professional and obviously an incredible player. And when we started the process of like adding Keegan to the show, he said, listen, if it comes down to a captain's pick, I want you there, yes or no. And a week before, we had said, you know, I talked to him, same thing. He said, listen, we think the picks are either going to be Sunday or Monday. We're going to have a crew in Jupiter. Like, is it okay if they come over? And he said, yes or no, bring them.
Okay, so again, amazing stuff. You had three different film crews. You had this and that. You had Keegan being the pro. Keegan saying, I want you at my house, whether I get it or not. That's amazing to me. But also, the fact that the crew went to the wrong house that day, and then they had to call Keegan at the last moment, and then Chad had to call Keegan. And when Keegan got the call from Chad, he thought it was like, he got it. And it like, yeah. and him talking about that, letting us, that is just brutal. So he got like blindsided again. I mean, that's just tough. But Shane, to your point about JT, it's incredible. They almost missed JT altogether. He kind of blew everybody off. He didn't want to be captured. And so Chad Mumm, he just went radio silent. They couldn't get in touch with him. They sent someone to his second home in Nashville. They couldn't find him. They were knocking on his door, no response, nothing. Wow. And then here's hours later, I'll cut to the story here, but hours later, he sends them a text and he said, I think you'll like this. He had his wife, Jill. Is it Jill?
Jill.
What's her name? Jill. Jillian is Keegan's wife. He had Jill film him while he's doing that little walk, and he sent that. So that's the video they ended up using. It actually wasn't filmed by them. So here was Chad Mumm's reaction to that.
He was too nervous to sit around the house. So he left, you know, snuck out the back way and went on this long walk and asked Jill to film it. He said, I hope this works. Maybe you could use it. And it was like the greatest thing ever. And when we realized that we got it, it was like, it was just relief for everybody, because I think if he felt confident that he was getting the pick, or had tipped his hand, or someone had, you know, he'd found out, He would have let our cameras in there. He would have wanted to see that, but he was too nervous. He didn't think it was going to happen. And then about 4 hours later, he sends me a picture with him with a giant largemouth bass. And that's how he went fishing to celebrate. And so you are seeing for the first time ever an extremely real, extremely dramatic moment, like captured in verite. And the scene almost plays out in about the amount of time that it went down. And so for us to kind of hinge an entire season, which we've been building to on this 120-minute period, yeah, after it was over, I was like, I think I just sat down on a couch. Just was like, I can't believe we got it. And now we, you know, let's go to Rome.
Okay, Shane, you're our biggest Ryder Cup guy. We get into, you know, the picks thing was amazing. What did you think about the actual, you know, you've written a book about the Ryder Cup. What did you think about how they portrayed everything that goes into the Ryder Cup and the action itself in Rome?
Yeah, this is where I'll throw a tiny bit of cold water on it a little bit. Okay. I think it was fine, but it hurt them not to be in the locker rooms straight up. And it was funny that it was like a narrative or a thing we were talking about leading up to the Ryder Cup that I think, I don't know if this is true or how much of this is true, but that Cantley and Shoffley were pretty against having the Netflix cameras in there. It's a shame. It's a shame from our perspective as a viewer. It's a shame because I read an interview for instance, with the Irish writer whose name I can't remember, who always interviews Rory, and he interviewed him and Shane Lowry after the whole incident with Lakava. They went back to the locker room and Shane Lowry apparently gave this insane, like, fire up speech where he was like, this is effing bullshit, like getting everybody pissed off, getting everyone steamed, which is why Rory was so steamed coming out and started screaming at Bones, which is then hilarious that Lowry was like, yo, man, you got to chill out, get back. Like, it was Lowry's fault that he was like that. Yeah. Like, he pumped him up and he was like, hey, Rory, you're going too far now. Yeah. But like things like that or anything that went on with Cantley and Shoffley in the locker room. Right. So to an extent, they did a pretty good job, I thought, not only dramatizing the Ryder Cup, but explaining it. Like, their graphics were really good and all that. It's just that what was new there. This was the only example maybe of the whole year where I felt like I'm just kind of trotting ground a little bit in terms of the drama of the playing, and especially the Lowry Rory. They didn't even get Rory really talking about the Lakava incident. Yeah. Like, that was right. I'm like, come on, you had him as a talking head. Why isn't he giving you anything there?
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. The thing we knew the day after was what we saw on Netflix. Like, there was nothing more.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they just ran back the Golf Channel footage of what happened in front of the clubhouse.
The car park.
Yeah. I thought the parts that were good were they captured literally what was being shouted right after it happened between Lowry and Lakava. That was great. That's what Netflix is for, like you said before, Shane. But you had to just run back the footage we all saw and a million times on Twitter, you know, when there was definitely more there. And like you said, there's probably some great stuff in the locker room. I mean, like I said about the Rory Oak Hill clip, that was such a great clip of his immediate reaction after what happened. If we could have gotten one clip from what was happening in both locker rooms after that, that would have been gold. But obviously they were against that.
Yeah, if it wasn't for like the whole Rory Lakava drama, like the Ryder Cup episode really would have fallen even
it's
flatter.
True. It would have been bad.
Yeah,
the Ryder Cup would have fallen flat too. I mean, we were all saying that through
100%.
Yeah.
So I agree. And I agree with you guys. Like, I expected more from this episode. And, you know, whoever's fault it is, you know, might be guys on the US team not having that access. Now, they should have like mic'd up somebody, and you know, they could have had, apparently there's this veto power. So like, you know, if guys are cursing incessantly in the team room, okay, I don't use that, but like, come on, we need a little more color, and that would have really made the episode so much better.
To CP's point though, the dialogue they picked up right after from Lowry being like, Joel, get off there, you prick.
Yeah, that was great.
My favorite was just Rose being like, Rose in the best is like, it was actually quite funny, Joe. It just went on a touch too long.
That was so good.
It was actually quite funny.
They were like surprisingly calm about it. Obviously Lowry was yelling, but then once they got close, it was like kind of perfectly That was the rose.
Right. Thing. Like they're even willing to admit it was pretty funny, but
yeah,
still touched too long. Yeah.
It made me sympathetic to LaCava too, because he was like, no, that's right. That's right. It went on too long. Yeah. And I said that to Rory. I'm sorry.
I said that to Rory. Yeah. He's like, we're cool. Like, we're cool. I said that to Rory. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like he kind of knew he screwed up. And he was like, right away, he was like, yeah, that's fair, Justin. That's fair what you said. Like, it's.
Man, I know. I wish we knew more because I have a feeling, and it's probably even why Rory didn't talk about it. I have a feeling they did say it. They apologized. And then Rory or someone were like, you know what? This is going to be our, you know, our rallying cry. And they made a bigger deal about it than it was. And then
I'm telling you, it was Lowry. Yeah. It was Lowry in the locker room.
And LaCava the next day was probably like, wait, this is still a story? Like, what the hell is going on? I already, you know, but they wanted to make a bit, which again, for all of us watching, it was fantastic. And for this series, it was fantastic because otherwise it was kind of a snooze. They did kind of smoke them. What else? What else should we talk about with the Ryder Cup before we wrap up here? I mean, Shane, you kind of covered it all. I mean, I agree. It was just one of those things. We all watched it so much too. And so when you don't really see that much extra that you didn't see, and that was that was in what, end of September, October. So that was a little more fresh in our minds too. So it wasn't even like, oh yeah, that happened. I mean, the Ricky concession, they talked about a little. I mean, he goes, if you're going to give that to him on like a normal round, why would you give it in Ryder Cup? It's like, no, that's the point, dude. That's not Ryder Cup. It's a 2.5 downhill putt for the Ryder Cup.
He makes me make that putt. Yeah. Like,
you know who's not giving that putt? You know who's not giving that putt? Keegan Bradley is not giving any.
No way. Yeah, no way. You know who's not giving that putt? Shane Lowry's not giving that putt.
No.
Like that. I mean, like, so that was kind of an insight there as well to the team. And let's see, final clip I wanted to play. We asked, you know, Chad Mumm, will there be a third season? Obviously, he does not know yet. He is optimistic, though. Take a listen.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Netflix doesn't announce renewals until after its shows are premiered. So I think we certainly feel like this universe of professional golf is not going to get any less dramatic over the next few years. And
right.
We have plenty of stories to continue to tell. So I think, you know, Warren and I and our teams would like nothing more than to do this for, you know, forever. So we're very hopeful that we the show does well and that people love it as much as we do and we get to do it again.
All right. So guys, if there is a third season, first of all, I mean, I assume we would all want there to be a third season. I guess the President's Cup could be part of it next year. Maybe get Tom Kim, loop him back in, see if he's still upset about the mud incident. What would you guys like to see if there is a third season of this?
That's a good question. I expected to see more Max Homa, to be honest.
Same.
You know, I know, like, we all sort of feel like we know his story too, but if we could dive deeper into sort of the real depths of his struggles, like, I feel like Netflix is best suited to tell that story. I also expected to see a little Lucas Oubre too. Ludwig Aubert. So I don't know.
I'm gonna say Lucas.
Lucas Glover.
He did a good year. He did have a good year.
Was Lucas Glover? Come on.
Where were those back-to-back wins? What a storybook finish for him. Yeah.
He was on the bubble too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to see a little more of the younger talent. I feel like the Auberts, Jake Knapp. I don't know.
Jake Knapp would be good.
Yeah.
I mean, Victor Hovland, I think, is such an amazing personality.
Great call.
Some people maybe not even realize. I think he would be he gets into some wild shit. If you follow him on Instagram, he's eating, you know, deer heads or whatever he's eating. He's eating crazy stuff. I think some behind the scenes Hovland content would actually be very good, and it would help him he's already blown up, but, you know, we're talking about a future world number one here, probably a major winner. So I would like to see some Hovland if there is a season three.
I just want more JT. Just
you love JT.
I want to point out one more moment before the JT moment that I know you guys love too. And I think it was a Netflix staged moment, but after Keegan won the Travelers, when JT was waiting there to give him a hug, it was like a Iago, right? And Othello. Keegan's so happy and here's like the snitching, oh, like, great job, Keegan. Give him a hug, like the kiss of death. I was like, there's no way they're good enough friends that JT would stick around to like wait for him, right? Like, Netflix definitely made him do that, but I shuddered. I was like, ah, the villain. but in a good way. I love JT. That's a good question though. Trying to think like who would be interesting. Definitely Ober. I'd love to know his story. Hovland would be amazing. Yeah, I think I'm just going to repeat what you guys said. Those are, to me, those two would be super to know. Give me all the Swedes and Nords and anyone you got.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give me all the Scandinavians.
Love some Scandinavians.
Get Henrik Stenson back in the mix now that he's,
Kimi Valinen or whoever almost won on the PGA Tour.
Palamaki.
Yeah. I need Murli Tagala back in here. But other than that, I was very happy with this season.
Oh, and Minwoo Lee. I mean, if they're going to do President's Cup,
I think they should
do President's Cup. I think we saw it get a little competitive in the last one.
For sure.
President's Cup becoming better than the Ryder Cup. I'm just saying.
Wow.
From a competitive angle, this one's going to be up in Canada.
Yeah, some Hadwin. Right.
If they had Hadwin last year, just like getting tackled by this. First of all, they had him getting pegged in the porta potty. That was how the season opened. Hadwin's like a Tom Kim guy. Just follow him around. Yeah. Some funny shit's going
to
happen.
We could do a whole Canadian episode. The Canadian.
You could. Leading up to the President's Cup.
Well,
plenty of good stuff, hopefully, to look forward to. And in terms of Homa, my fingers are crossed that, like, because they did obviously talk to him, that it's kind of like a Ricky Fowler situation where they're holding off and maybe he wins a major this year and then we really get the full Homa episode. That'd be something. So anyway, fingers crossed for all that. Anyway, we got through a lot today, but it was a lot of fun. We thank everybody for listening. We hope everybody enjoyed the show as much as we did. We hope we didn't give away too much stuff if you haven't watched it yet. Thanks for listening. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Greg Gottfried, who, had his work cut out for him on this one with all the moving pieces. And thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with a more normal episode. But until then, enjoy Full Swing.
Great. That was super fun. I'm glad we did
that. Awesome.
Considering we had four people, it can get messy, but I think we did pretty good. So
I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.